Okay, so our speaker John D will share his experience on a topic that I just forgot, but I'll write down as soon as
Okay.
he starts. And so take it away, John. Thank you.
Hi, good morning, everybody, or good evening, or whatever time it is where you are. I'm glad you're here, and thank you very much, Tally, for asking me to come and speak with you guys. I am a fixer, controller, chaos creator. I am a grateful member of Al-Anon and some other programs. And I'll share a little bit of my powerlessness and experiences I've had to qualify a little bit. And then I'll share a little bit about a solution that I found. And I don't know, it's tricky for someone who's controlling. I want to say there's a part of me that wants to say the right things and control the dynamic and do all these things. I'm a teacher, as some of us are. And so I was really determined to kind of allow and to kind of try to be a channel and to try to kind of let go and let things unfold the way it just feels right for them to unfold. It doesn't mean I abdicate my responsibility for speaking and trying to do a good job, but it just means that I have a tendency to want to control, as some of us do here. So, my first introduction to Al-Anon was I had a person in the apartment building where I was living, and I met her out by the swimming pool. I li was living in Santa Monica, and we connected and started hanging out and kind of dating. And it turned out she was a pretty severe alcoholic, it turned out. And I thought, well, this will be a cinch. I know from my own experience, I know how to fix this one. I'll just get her to go to some meetings. We'll see if she wants to go to treatment. This is a no-brainer. Like I was made for this. I'm designed to be here. This is why we met. I'm going to fix her. And what happened was I had a kind of a brutal experience with the limits of my own power and influence. The whole time we were together, about a year and a half, I never got her to go to a single AA meeting. And I tried everything I could. So I kind of hit a bottom where I was looking. I thought I smelled booze on her breath. And I started, she went into the living room and I started rifling through the cabinets in her kitchen to see where she was hiding it. And about a few minutes into it, I thought, what the hell am I doing? This feels crazy. It's almost like I'm the crazy one, not her. What the heck is happening here? And so I had been trying to help my brother get sober for years and trying to encourage my father to stop with his drinking. And so I went to my first Al-Anon meeting. And there at my first Al-Anon meeting, I was just, as a newcomer, I was asked to share. And something weird happened where I lost control for a second and I started crying. And I don't know where it came from. I've been to a bunch of other 12-step programs for a long time and I never cried. And, this woman got up and it was such a nice instinct. I think she was going to the bathroom or to get coffee. It was a much older woman and she just kind of rubbed my back and it was really gentle. It was really sweet. And it's not something that would happen in the other program that I was in. And then I was kind of like, so something profound opened in me, and I had a great realization, and I actually was able to a great extent to heal the relationship with my brother and father and stop trying to guilt trip and control them. And to a great extent, because of the help I got in Al-Anon, I was able to navigate a way out of that relationship. It turned out that this person was not going to change for me, and I couldn't change them. And I could give dozens of other examples. I might a little later with some recent events where I've struggled with my own sort of limits of my power and the frustration of that. But I think I'd like to talk a little bit about sort of the deep root of recovery that's available, especially in a soul searching and deep and transformative process like BBA, where you're really kind of having a reckoning. right? I'm really kind of opening myself up for the possibility of a deep transformation. Let me breathe for a second. I think this thing only backs down in the face of love and of a real and a deep commitment. And it didn't back down in the face of what I thought it would, which was my brain trying to figure it out and just trying to win the game and do the steps right and do what I'm supposed to do and show up early for my commitments and 20 chocolate chip cookie commitments and on time for the coffee commitment and everything else, and still staying sick and controlling and not really surrendering. It hadn't traveled from my head down to my heart. It hadn't really moved me. And I would love to say, out of virtue and realization, I sort of surrendered and I turned myself in. But what happened is I kept coming up against the failure of my ability to control, the failure of my ability to properly reckon the serenity prayer. You know, there wasn't much acceptance. There was courage, and there was what I thought was wisdom. I'm going to change these things, and I know how to do it, and I know what to do to change it. And it turns out that what was missing was a deep level of letting go, and of acceptance, and of allowing, and of moving from a state of tolerance to, well, to kind of love, to kind of acceptance, to kind of to appreciation. So I'm going to say some just general things that may or may not apply to you, but they're experiences I've had and realizations I've had. So in going through the work the way it was outlined to me, there was a fairly serious idea in step one to really visit the powerlessness and to concede to my innermost self this level of powerlessness. And how do I concede? I was told one concession at a time. First, I would concede that physically I was powerless over the chemicals in my body that got going once I was in control of things and I was fixing everything. There was definitely some brain chemistry happening, and my system was altered and it felt good. And I was addicted to this feeling of being in control, especially when it all came together. Yes. I was powerless mentally over the obsession to want to go back and control again. So I had to eventually concede that, which was much harder. And the last part was the hardest, the spiritual malady. The very last part was the hardest concession and the deepest concession. I had entered a state where life was so untenable by trying to allow and let go, and I was so fear-based and so disconnected from the world and my higher power that I had to wrest control back to stop from going crazy. That's how it felt. That was the state that I was in. I believe now, looking back, that there is kind of a sweet spot or a level that can be reached that's beautiful and that's deep, and that's not sustainable 24/7, but is largely sustainable to the point where someone could announce and saying the truth that they had recovered from this hopeless state of mind and body. Let's say that in step three, and some of these are abstractions, but I think they're useful abstractions, and I think the big book is in some ways an instruction book, but also a sacred text. And there are parables there, and there are stories, and there are narratives. And in step three, I make this decision. I'm going to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand God. And so I make this decision. You know, I make a few decisions. I'm not going to root down in the kind of the minutia of the step stuff. I am a bit of a step technician and a step lawyer, but I don't feel like digging down in that today. And you know, I'm not teaching here. As my sponsor used to say, no teaching, no preaching, shut up and share and tell the truth, tell the truth, tell the truth. The only currency that matters in this program is to be vulnerable, to be honest, transparent, with people that are safe. It's how I can transform fear to courage. It's how I can go from shame to grace. Spirituality only really comes alive in community. And that's what I found. I found that I never got one up on the universe and won the game. I realized that what we really have is a daily reprieve based on a spiritual maintenance. I had the awareness that I didn't own the program or buy it or have control of it. I was renting it, and the rent was due every day. The rent is due every day. Every day I'm going to recommit. Every day I'm going to lean into the beautiful, elevation that this program offers. So let's say I was to go in, not just with my mind, but with my whole heart into step three and make a decision. And let's say the party on the other side of this contractual agreement was not like me, did not waffle and go back and forth. Let's say that other party took it very seriously. God has decided and will not change his mind. You're now a light worker forever in the sacred tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, and the 12-step programs. Go forth and do good work. Here you go. You know, you're on the journey. And then in the fourth step, this reckoning that I had, and I'm so grateful for the third column that some of us around here do. If you look at this third column from the perspective of fixer, controller, chaos creator, it is profound if you can connect it to step three. This is what I found in 30 years of doing this work. This is what unfolded for me. You know, God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. I found that I had, along the line of emotional sobriety, these faulty emotional dependencies, right? Bill's letter. But I found something deeper, which was that if I was going to carry over my third step decision, my third column awareness was, from this day forward, I will make no special provision to arrange for my own security. My sense of security will come from God. From this day forward, I will allow my personal ambition to be stamped out, and what I want, and my sense of ambition and what I want in the world will come from God. From this day forward, you know, my sense of self-esteem will not be given to me by my control of other people and circumstances. I'm going to go forward with the third step decision, and my self-esteem and my sense of who I am will come from God. All of it is the proper use of the will for me. It's to shift my emotional dependencies from people who are disappointing and myself, who can't control all the variables, over to a superposition of all potential good and all actual good in my higher power. So when going through onto, you know, my part, so to speak, a friend of mine says, you know, you've got self trying to find self. Thank you. I see that 2 minute warning. And I love this. He says, you know, it's really hard for ego or self to see self. For me to do, you know, soul appraisal is insufficient. If I'm trying to just figure it out myself with a big book and a piece of paper in a room somewhere, I need an interlocutor, right? I need to be reading this and sharing this to someone. Although self, the culprit and the detective, you know, finding the culprit is a bad detective, as my friend says, but this culprit, this ego, this self leaves clues. It leaves clues. One of the clues is resentment. Another one is fear. Another one is the way I show up in relationships, my relationship conduct. These can expose to me, and if I can follow that trail of crumbs, something profound can happen. I can start to see the truth. I can start to break my conditioning. My job is to wake up spiritually. My job is to break my conditioning. My mental conditioning is actually editing out reality. That's what I found out. And I wasn't going to be able to think my way out of it. Bill W. wrote this beautiful letter to a guy, and it says, the primary healing circuit of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon is to be able to receive love and to give love, is to be able to express love and to receive love. I made a mistake. I thought control was love. Don't call it love. I always wanted something back. It was not an unselfish giving. I always wanted a thank you. I wanted a nod. I just helped organize this big holiday party for my home group, and my plan kind of fell apart a little bit. And because of what I've learned around here, I was able to kind of sit there and go, okay, it's going to be all right. There are responsible people here. I don't always have to run everything. It's going to go okay. I'm the host. I was supposed to pick up this guy from the airport to speak. I didn't know Joe Biden was in town. I didn't know they were going to close down the entire freeway from the airport to downtown. And so I normally what I would have done is fought through the traffic for 2 hours, right, for a 20-minute drive. Instead, he said, listen, I can take an Uber. And I said, yeah, why don't you take an Uber? And then the co-chair called and said, did you pick up Wyatt from the airport? I said, no. And they're all, what do you mean? Your job was to pick him up. I said, he took an Uber. Are we going to have to pay for that? No, it's all going to be worked out. It's all going to be okay. I was able, because of what I've learned here, to let go and to not take on somebody else's drama and control and to not get caught up. You know, to get to a point of kind of letting go, to get to a point of kind of, I would say, a kind of a sweet spot. Until I went through this work and through the amends, through the whole process, until I completed my primary relationship, all my relationships were an attempt to complete my primary relationship. I was just spinning. I was just grasping at straws, right? I was just like a tornado through people's life, thinking I was giving love by offering what I thought they needed, or the fixing that I thought they needed. And inevitably, almost always, it ended up in a chaotic end. So I'm extremely grateful for this. I really look forward to hearing from you guys. I really look forward to leaning into this continual idea of letting go and allowing. It actually feels good. It feels good to let the chips fall where they may now, and it used to torment me. So I've been shifted and to a great extent have recovered, and I'm very, very grateful for that. Thank you. Thank you.